Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the Player Development First podcast. This is our first one. I wanted to start a podcast just to get having conversations with some coaches that I feel are having a good impact on youth soccer development. I'm also hoping to get some players on as well, just to have a get some good discussions going on about their experiences, what they felt done helped them in their journey to playing at a good competitive level. So today's guest is a good friend of mine, Ben Scott. Ben was my director of coaching at Larchmont Amarnik FC when I first moved to the United States in 2015. He also owns GB Soccer Coaching, where he coaches a lot of pre-Ks, kindergartens, first grade, second grade clinics, and camps. He also works for NCE at the National Center of Excellence program, where they take a lot of supplemental training for really high-level kids. So a really top coach, a really intelligent guy. Really happy to get him on, and I hope you enjoy the episode. If there's anyone that would be interested in coming on, you're welcome to reach out to me. My email address is greg@pd1sports.org. I'm also on Instagram, PD1 Soccer Club. We also have a website, pd1sports.org. So if anyone's interested in PD1 or getting in contact regarding the podcast, please reach out. And we'll get you all the information needed. But thanks. I hope you enjoy this episode. Plenty more to come. And hopefully my hosting skills get a bit better as we go along. But, you know, you got to start somewhere. But thanks very much, guys. Hope you enjoy. Bye. Hi, Ben.
Hi, mate. How are you doing?
Not too bad, mate. Listen, I wanted to thank you a lot for being our first guest on the Player Development First podcast. You've had a big influence on my personal coaching development. So I felt it was only it was right to get yourself on to be the first guest. At the end, really appreciate your time.
No problem. I think it's a good thing that you're doing down in Texas, and with what's going on in the world at the moment, I think it's just good to have a chat and catch up, right?
No, absolutely, mate. Really, I really appreciate it. But how did you get started in coaching initially?
Well, I didn't start really in football, soccer coaching. I started coaching cricket, which some of your US guests might know not what's about. It's a little bit like baseball, but kind of not. Maybe Google that. Rugby. And like multi-sports. I did that from when I was about 17. So I've been doing that. I did that for more than 20 years. I've been coaching for more than 20 years now. I started off, I played cricket to a half decent level when I was in England, got injured at the age of like 18, 19, and then really started looking at coaching as a career. So I ended up coaching for Yorkshire Cricket Club and their indoor school, doing my cricket coaching licenses. And then I started progressing from there when I kind of went to university. I took my football level one, just because I thought, right, this is what I want to do. I want to be involved in coaching no matter what sport it is. This is what I'm interested in. This is what I like to do. I can't really play anymore with my injury. I eventually had three ACL tears in the same knee. So I couldn't play, and like filling that void with coaching was the next best thing. So I'd do the football in schools for a couple of companies, did the cricket in schools, did multi-sports, camps during the summer, camps during the school breaks. And just that introduction to coaching all levels was kind of where I was at. Eventually I ended up doing the football level two, the FA level two one, one summer, and then kind of looked to progress it a little bit further. I kind of volunteered at my local club, my football club that I played for. I didn't really play that much football when I was a kid. In all honesty, it was mainly rugby and cricket, but I played a little bit, and I was always okay at football. I was never...
You played cricket there quite a high level though, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I played for like Yorkshire Schoolboys at like 14 and 15, and then I played for Yorkshire Senior Schools at like 18. But I was never good enough to make it as a pro or anything like that. I never had any, ramifications or ideas that I was going to make it. Like I was quite clearly not good enough. There was, I was decent, but I wasn't that good. you know. Yeah. And mainly because I think it was also in my head a little bit that, you know, I didn't really want it enough. Like, if you want to become a pro at anything, then you've got to really want it. I didn't want it. There was other distractions. And when you get to kind of 17, 18, there's definitely different distractions in your life.
Sure. Absolutely. And so, obviously, that seems like you got your level one, you got your level two. Was at that stage when you kind of finished university, is that when you'd look to the venture out to the United States?
Yeah, I mean, I knew people that had been out here, and I actually saw, and this was like, I know Paul Kelcher on his podcast, he does a lot of, you know, he saw an advert on the back of, I think it was a student union thing.
Yes.
It was a similar sort of thing with me. I saw an advert for UK Elite Soccer. I can't remember actually where it was. It might have been in like a magazine or at the uni that I was at. I went to Trinity and All Saints University, which is part of Leeds University. Uh-huh. In England, and I saw it and I was like, this sounds great, this sounds as though it's just a new opportunity. Get to go and visit America, which I've never been to, and not that it's a paid holiday or paid vacation, but it's just like, right, I want to go and try something new. So I just applied for it. And again, as I said, I've done a bit of like football coaching, soccer coaching, but mainly multi-sports, cricket and rugby. And I thought, well, if they give me the curriculum, they give me what to coach, I'm pretty confident in standing in front of people to do it. So why not? So I gave it a go. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the beginning. I came over in 2005. I think I came over on St. Patrick's Day, which was a good day, with UK Elite. And we did a week's intensive training, like a staff training week, which was enjoyable. Got to meet a lot of the lads that I was going to be coaching with, lads that I was going to be living with, who I'm still friends with now. The likes of Martin White and Ian Wing, a lad called Graham Pitts as well, that I'm still kind of in touch with a little bit. And just kind of progressed from there, where I just used to like the way of life, you know, like we'd live together in a house with a bunch of lads, a bunch of guys, and we'd go out and coach and we'd talk about coaching. And it was just a really positive experience that first year in 2005 when I was with UK Elite.
And were you positioned in New York, was it at that time?
Yeah, and that was, again, just lucky that I was, myself and the guys that I live with, we lived in Westchester County, Hartsdale, which is just near White Plains, New York. And it was only us, it was only one house. The rest of the guys lived in New Jersey or Pennsylvania. And we were kind of left to our own devices somewhat. So it was good. It was a good experience the first year as well, just like, you know, living in America, meeting new people, different culture kind of thing. So
it's like, I always say that first year, I mean, I came out, I guess it was maybe, it would have been 10 years after you came out, actually. Yeah, it was, I came out 2015. And obviously you were my director of coaching whenever I first came out. But that first year was just like getting so many hours in the field, because you know what it's like when you're back in Northern Ireland or England or the UK, it's like, you know, some teams will practice for an hour a week. Sometimes it's 2 hours a week, but you know, and maybe an hour on a, you know, on a weekend. But when you're in the States, that's, you know, you're coaching from maybe 3:30 to 9:30 every day. Like that, you just get so much time on the field, that so many hours.
Well, I think it shows the amount of lads and guys that have been over here that either stay and continue coaching here or go back to, you know, the UK, Ireland, whatever they're from, and then continue with that career or go into teaching or go into something that's, you know, involved in what they're doing. And I think they would say that the experience of coming to America to live here for a year, 2 years, 3 years, however long they were here for, really stands them in good stead going forward, because you get to experience all different types of coaching. You know, you get to experience different types of kids, different types of families, people, the different cultures from, you know, different areas that you're coaching in, you know, different clubs. I just think it's one of those experiences I would recommend, you know, if you're interested in it, you know, and you're back in the UK or back in Europe, come and do it. Definitely. I recommend it to a lot of my friends that were back home. Not many of them took it up, but I would say that it's definitely worth a chance, just for a year or even for a summer, you know, to come over and just to give it a go, give it a shot.
Just experiencing the different, I mean, I know from my point of view, you know, the first sort of month was a bit of an eye opener when you're coaching kids from Belfast. And then you come into, you know, maybe like an affluent town, like a Scarsdale or a Larchmont, and, you know, you're dealing with different types of parents. It's just, you know, it was just a complete culture shock for me the first sort of month. So, you know, I just appreciated the holistic experience of it all, just being, you know, being, you know, the different age groups you would coach. You know, I'd never coached, you know, kids 3, 4, 5, 6 years old before coming over to the States, or girls. So, I mean, just again, I would absolutely recommend that to anyone that's thinking about they might want to get involved in coaching as a career. Just give it a 9 month, or give it a, you know, a summer even. I think it'd be.
I agree. I think you get a lot of experience coming here. You're going to do a lot more coaching than you would say back home, where, as you say, twice a week, or, you know, an hour each night in a school or whatever. And then the diversity of the coaching that you're doing, no matter if it's high level, mid level, rec, you know, 3, 4, 5, pre-K through second grade, you're getting that experience. And I think, you know, if you can coach that level, that pre-K through second grade, I think you can coach any level, in my opinion. I think as long as you put your mind to it, as long as you want it, you want to do it for the right reasons, you are doing it because you like and you enjoy coaching, then I think you've got a good base. It gives you a good base. And when I first came over, I would always get given the youngest groups, as you do when you're a new coach. You get given the younger kids on camps and things. And it was tough at first, but you kind of get used to it and you get through it a bit, you know.
Absolutely. And so you started off at UK Elite. Did you you stayed for UK Elite for a couple of years, was it?
Yeah, I did 2 9-month stints, 2005, 2006. And then 2006, in the summer, end of the summer, I met my now wife, Amanda. Mm-hmm. And they were not going to have a house in New York anymore. They were moving back to New Jersey. So I was just like, I don't think this is for me. Bit of, not a falling out, but a few disagreements with some of the staff, senior staff members there. And I just felt as though a change might be necessary. So went back to England in 2007, looking at options to come back. And then in 2008, I came back with Noga Soccer, and ended up living in Connecticut for probably a year on and off. Uh-huh. But yeah.
And were you working in clubs then in Connecticut?
Yeah, I was working. Well, I was working in John Jay, which was then Lewisboro Soccer Club, which is on the New York Connecticut border. Which was a good club, just a local, like, grassroots, you know, travel club. But there was, you know, maybe 15 to 20 teams, maybe only like one team at each age group, travel team. So I had a couple of teams there. And then we'd do like the rec program. We'd do you know, like a K through two, some pre-K. And then we'd be doing the camps and the clinics and things like that during the summer. So yeah, similar to UK Elite, but just in a different area, basically.
Sure. And I know a big thing with Noga, whenever I was, again, exploring options to come out to the States, it was Noga I was initially looking at. But by the time I graduated, it was they'd merged with UK Elite. Yeah. But I was, you know, the staff training with Noga, I mean, I got to sample a little bit of it with UK Elite, with Tim Bradbury and Gary Book and those guys. But I can imagine it was just a great environment to get involved in for the professional development aspect.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, when I was with UK Elite, the first couple of years, we had Steve Jones, who was good, but we wouldn't see him as regularly. It would be before the start of the spring season. There'd be a week in the summer, and then you might have a week before the start of the fall season for the new members of staff. So it wasn't as much with Tim and Gary. It was 2 or 3 times a week. And you'd be there early, either in Connecticut or down in Long Island. So you'd be up at like 6, and you'd be traveling an hour or two to get there. But no one would really moan and groan about it, in all honesty. You know, like, to go to do something, to better yourself. All the lads were there. It was good fun. You know, there's some good banter going on, and we got a lot out of it. And I would say, you know, Tim and Gary are probably the two most important, like, coach educators for me in terms of mentors, as well as, you know, some other coaches that I've been lucky enough to learn from. But their kind of style, which is both very different from, you know, Tim's, you know, abrasive at times, but is as good as you'll see in terms of coach educator. Gary's more softly spoken, but, you know, more subtle in terms of what he does. And I think they're both brilliant, and I owe a lot to them both for what they've done. And I think, you know, listen to other podcasts and listening to other lads that have worked for them, and the amount of people that have now made a way in the game that kind of started at Noga, you can see there's so many people, the influence of those guys, and just that environment. It was just great. It was just good fun. But as you say, 2 or 3 times a week, during the spring and the fall season, and during the summer as well, you can only you can only hope to get better, really. You know, you're not going to get any worse, even if you're taking in 10% of what's going on. You're going to get better.
I remember a lot of it was in Bridgeport, and I think they would do it once a week when I was first with UK Elite, but just after that merge with Noga. But it completely just opened my eyes to, you know, like some of the activities I would have done back in the UK, and then coming over and seeing just, you know, there's like no lines, no laps, no lectures, you know, your freeze moments, like having a bit of a structure to do all that, like, you know, just given that sort of a platform to be able to go out and coach in front of other coaches, I just think it was amazing.
I think another thing, I still use Noga's curriculum 15 years later, you know, 12, 15 years later, and we still use it at LMFC, the club that I work for. We're in the process of kind of developing it and making it our own, but it takes a little time, but we still use it. It's still great stuff. A lot of the stuff that's in there is very much ahead of its time. You know, the small-sided game stuff, and the activities that involve everybody, you know, making sure people aren't sitting out, or, you know, making it more game-like, gamification of things, just all that sort of stuff. That's all in there. But that's, you know, that's pretty a big buzz at the moment, or in the last kind of 5 years with US soccer, that making everything more game-like. We were used to that because we were being taught that. And as you say, being put up to coach in front of other coaches just puts you outside your comfort zone a bit. Right. And everybody's in the same boat, so you are nervous doing it, but like, you're only going to get better by doing it. And it's like, it's throwing you into the lion's den a little bit. But, you know, at some points when I was younger, I didn't really enjoy it, but now I'd thrive on that. I'd love to do that. Okay. You know, I don't mind doing it. I don't mind doing it in front of, you know, even our coaches at LMFC, or if I go on coaching courses or licenses or whatever, I'm always the first one to try and get involved now. And I think that's mainly because of that environment.
Absolutely. And I even just, like, although I thought Tim was you know, fantastic, and Gary was brilliant too, I thought even just being as a novice coach coming out in 2015 to see likes of like Barry Beattie or Alan O'Keefe running a session, or Ben Foster, or even yourself you know, at a staff training event, I was just, you know, blown away by how good everyone was, even just like the mannerisms that people would use. Again, I just thought it was an amazing environment that was created. And I mean, like if you had this, it is now, you could get up at 6 a.m. and go and drive to, you know, Long Island or Bridgeport or something to go and do a staff training event. You know, you'd probably you wouldn't fancy it too much, but I mean, I'd pay for it now if they get that environment back. It was great.
We find that coaches that come coach at LMFC, or coaches that I deal with that haven't had that, you know, that environment to learn, are not behind per se, but just don't have the same, you know, outlook on coaching.
Sure.
That we really want to continue. We want to continue growing it and making it, you know, as it was, but we find that coaches are a little bit different if they've worked for another coaching company or organization, or they've done more of a structured coaching license or course or something like that. You know, it was a great education, and I'm, you know, very, very grateful for Noga, including Neil Graham, who was one of the other owners as well, and Tim Bradbury and Gary Book, for what they've done for me and for many coaches, you know, especially in the Northeast.
Absolutely. So, from Noga, you spent quite a bit of time there.
In 2008, I started working there just as on a, you know, 9-month contract. And then into 2010, I got engaged to Amanda, and we got married in 2010, end of 2010. And then after that, I took on more of a full-time role as assistant regional manager with Ben Foster in Westchester. I met Ben previously when I worked for UK Elite, out and about coaching on fields, but not really, you know, didn't really know him that well, just said hi to him. Now, being from England, you can kind of tell, you know, the coaches that are coaching locally. But then in 2008, having worked, you know, Noga as a coach, we kind of hit it off, got it together, and I ended up working, moving from John Jay Football Club, formerly Lewisburgh, to Mamaroneck, and then taking over that assistant regional manager role for Noga. So that was kind of the next step in the coaching journey, taking over teams in Mamaroneck, working with Ben, you know, doing the summer camps and just kind of, you know, progressing and keeping going. And it was enjoyable, good environment with Ben. We had a few coaches working under us. Simon McCarthy came on, I think, 2012-ish, sometime around there as well. Simon still works with us in LMFC at the moment. So, yeah, another good environment and enjoyed working there.
Yeah, and so at what stage did you become director of coaching then at LMFC? Was that
When Noga was bought out by UK Elite in 2014, went back to UK Elite, still was doing the same thing in Mamaroneck. And then people started to leave and do their own thing. Ben Foster helped engineer Larchmont Soccer Club and Mamaroneck Junior Soccer League become LMFC, so they merged to become one club. And then in 2016, there was the visa issues that we had with coaches coming over, and we couldn't provide coaches from Mamaroneck at that point. So it was just to the stage where, you know, myself, Ben and Simon decided that, you know, we can do this ourselves. And we put it to the board, you know, we'd like to do this ourselves. And then I was picked as and employed as director coaching for the boys at LMFC, Simon for the girls, and then Ben for the younger kids, the U8s and 9s and 10s. Mm-hmm. So then it was, 2016. So it will be coming on 6 years that I've been the boys director of coaching there.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I have to say for a club I worked there, obviously when I first came out in 2015 for that year, and then obviously Ben employed me in 2018 for a couple of years. And it was one of those clubs where I just think they really get the, you know, development first, right? You know, it kind of inspired me to go ahead and start PD1, which is how you guys run it. You know, it's very much a development focus. Winning obviously is a byproduct of if we're doing a good job. If we're, you know, it's not a win at all cost environment at all. I feel like coaches really get a good sort of freedom to go on and you know, plan their sessions that are development focused. Obviously the NOGA manual and stuff, I remember the first sort of day I was there, you'd give me one of those NOGA manuals, and you know, I just thought it was a great, you know, environment to come into, to experience how, you know, a club should be run that has a development focus, and then go on and take it on to my other coaching. So, you know, I loved my time at LMFC. I really did. And as directors of coaching, I feel like you guys done a great job of, you know, I know me and yourself done our D license together, but you're always very supportive of people going and furthering themselves and in their coach education. At LMFC, then you also, we both worked together at NCE also, and you still do a bit of work with
NCE. I still work for John Curtis, who is the founder of the NCE program, training program. And I'm just a coach there, just a staff coach, as you want to call it. What I enjoy about that is I just turn up and coach. I don't have to do some of the roles that I do at LMFC. I mean, the roles that I do at LMFC, I organize the boys teams. We organize the coaches together, making sure professional coaches, parent coaches, we organize the players, making sure that, you know, the right level players go on the right level teams. We do the tryouts, other things, you know, we do a lot of admin as directors of coaching there, a lot of communication through email. We do a lot of logistical stuff in terms of like organizing, you know, games, fields, you know, lining of fields, equipment. So it's basically we run the club, you know, and other things like, you know, we do the curriculum. I do professional development for our coaches. I video our coaches and send them feedback. And again, I'm not a coaching guru, far from it. But I am, you know, I've been coaching for 20 years and I think I can offer something, even if it's just a little word here and there. For the NCE, the great thing about the NCE is I just coach, so it's high level. I've been there for I think 7 or 8 years now, can't really remember, 2014-15, and it started off with just three supplemental training centers, one in Connecticut, I think one in New York, and then one in either Jersey or Long Island. I can't remember which it was, and Ben Foster got me involved in that as well. John was looking for coaches, and myself and Ben went to do some sessions for him, and it kind of just snowballed from there, where myself, Ben, and then you came on board when, you know, later that we just kind of did the Westchester sessions. It was very popular, and we get a very good level of player, boys and girls. And it's just, I think it's a good environment for kids that are in travel to maybe bridge the gap and go to that next step.
Yeah.
In terms of, right, if they're ready to go to a club, a premier club, I don't really like the word premier, but club, like a club team, you know, or whether they're not quite there yet. And it also gives the kids that are in that premier club kind of environment an opportunity to train with other kids, you know, kids from different backgrounds, different areas, different teams, sometimes older kids, younger kids, you know. I just think it's a good thing. It's just it's a good program. I've continued to work for it because I believe in it. And we do recommend kids from LMFC to go there that, you know, maybe deserve a bit more of a challenge and a bit more of a, you know, a push kind of thing.
Absolutely. I just loved, you know, getting the chance to work with that caliber of player, you know, the speed of play. And, you know, I know that NC have they've got a great curriculum themselves. So, you know, I definitely think it was a great environment for the boost player development. And even just how they organize the fields and stuff, and, you know, and the quality of the fields, something I want to try and implement that at PD.
Oh, yeah, I think 100% the branding of things, you know, the way that it's run in terms of the social media, the marketing, the website, and everything that's sent out, the uniforms, even the balls, the banners, the cones, everything that's just really professional. I think John's tried to base it on, you know, when he was brought up, when he played at United as a youngster, that's kind of how it was, development, school of excellence kind of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just, as you say, that the level of player is a lot higher than I'm used to coaching at LMFC. So it's enjoyable. And I think coaching, actually, I do enjoy coaching the girls there because the level of girls at this, at the centre in Westchester is high. And we don't quite have that within LMFC. So it's good to coach girls that are really into soccer and really take it kind of seriously and, you know, want to kick on and get better. And it also offers, you know, opportunities going forward, whether it's college or even with pro clubs, or they, you know, they do tournaments, they do trips to England and trips to Italy, trips to the Gothia Cup, things like that. And it's just another string to the bow of a soccer player that was really into it, you know, really into playing.
Well, one thing that I guess with this podcast, I want to give, you know, coaches a voice to talk about a topic that they, you know, are very interested in. And one topic that I know you're very knowledgeable about, and, you know, as a coach you're fantastic at, is coaching the younger ages. And, you know, specifically development of the younger ages, I wanted to talk about. And I know you've set up your own business with your GB soccer coaching.
A couple of years ago I just set up an LLC company so I could get paid into it. It's just easier than, you know, getting paid here, there and everywhere. But I set it up just so that I could do some, you know, camps, clinics, programs. And I was doing soccer classes before that for the younger kids, the pre-K, you know, the threes and the fours, and the kindergarten, the fives and the sixes. But that kind of also came from, like, as I said to you before, you know, getting thrown in the deep end on a camp, coaching the youngest ages. I mean, not coaching pre-K, but kind of coaching kindergarten. And I then end up, you know, I'd do it, and then I didn't mind volunteering to do it because I felt as though on a camp, I'd rather do that than coach a group of, you know, 9-10-year-olds that are maybe not as interested. At least I was having fun coaching these kids. So that was a good thing, you know, running around, being the clown, being the jester and the joker. And then again, I'm not a coaching guru at it. Again, it's just experience. I think I'm fairly good, but I've seen plenty of other good coaches at it, including yourself, you know, and James Large, Ben Foster, those kind of guys, really good at it. It's just the personality, you know, that you have to do it. Like, some coaches dismiss it straight away. They're saying they can't do it. And that might be the case, but it's probably they don't want to do it. And it's having the enthusiasm, maybe having some education. I think I'm a better coach with that age group now, pre-K and K, because I have my own kids, my own two boys, and realizing how kids work. But the GB soccer coaching stuff, I run my own programs in my hometown, a pre-K through two program. I started that last spring, and we're going to be doing it. We did it in the fall, and we're going to do it this spring as well. And just offering something, because I see some of these other, you know, organizations that run classes, and again, not to badmouth them, not to throw them under the bus, but it's not brilliant. And you've probably seen it yourself, and you've seen how coaches are not suited to coaching that age group. You know, some they'll coach them as though they're on a travel team, or they'll coach them as though they're in high school or college or whatever. And it's not always about being the best coach. It's about understanding the kids. You know, kids are kids first, and then players and athletes second, right? They're kids. Some of these players might go on and play professionally. Hopefully they do. That'd be great. But in all honesty, not many of them are. Let's be honest. The best thing we can do is make them and try and encourage them to love the game. You know, they want to love it. They want to enjoy playing. They want to come back next week. They want to come back next season. We want to try and make sure that they're in an environment where they're learning. And I try and do all the hidden, you know, the hidden meaning, the hidden messages, you know, playing the Star Wars games with them, thinking that, you know, they're kicking a ball off a cone, but they're actually using their laces to kick it, or playing the Sleeping Giant game where they're having to, you know, steal a cookie or an ice cream and they're stopping the ball and using the sole of their foot to roll it backwards. And, you know, that's what does it for me. And I remember Tim Bradbury saying one of his greatest coaching achievements was getting a player, I think it might have been a kindergarten group, to believe that the penny that he was wearing was an invisible penny. And the kid took the penny home and was like, you know, walking around telling his mum or his dad afterwards that they couldn't see him because he was wearing the invisible penny. So having that like adventure soccer, you know, that storybook soccer, just really encouraging them, making sure that they want to play, and trying to get them, as you said, to love it. And I had it a couple of weeks ago, and this is one of the greatest things in my coaching experiences. I had a player go home and tell his dad he had to be Coach Ben. And he had to be Sleeping Giant in the back garden or in the basement or whatever it was. And that he wasn't doing Coach Ben right because he was waking up too easily when he was playing Sleeping Giant. So his parents text me and told me that and just thanked me for everything. And, you know, and again, it's not a brag. It's not me showing off, boasting or anything like that. It's just a story like that makes it all worthwhile, in my opinion. So that's what I'm trying to achieve with the GB soccer coaching stuff. You know, I don't do a ton of it because I've got other stuff going on with the club and the NCE and with the family as well. But I do enough where I just kind of, you know, offer a couple of classes each week in the fall and spring.
And do you structure it? Like, I remember whenever I would, you know, I would do some sessions for Ben Foster and some for yourself too. I would have like, you know, it was a 7-week program. I would split it up into like a different theme each week. So 1 week it might be space, 1 week it might be sea, or pirate ship, or one week it might be animals. Is that a good way?
I mean, at the moment I just bought some new cones, so they're orange and red, and we're playing the floor is lava. So they're dribbling around these cones, and when I shout the floor is lava, they're putting the ball on top of the cone and kicking the ball off because they like that. That's what they're watching on TV or Netflix or whatever they're, you know. Or I'm trying to keep it topical, like PJ Masks was a big thing in my household. Star Wars is a big thing in my household at the moment. So again, having kids has helped me in that regard in terms of relating to kids and what they're into. You know, and we're playing the Marvel superhero game a couple of weeks ago, where every game was a Marvel game. As you say, we might have a pirate theme 1 week, or we might have a dinosaur. Dinosaurs go down well with younger kids. You know, we have a zoo theme, anything that can grab their imagination. And the kids that are maybe not into it, I'm a big believer in, you know, giving them an opportunity to try and get into it. Like, you can't force them to do it. Like, the big thing, you see kids and you see parents, and I've seen it more, again, not recently, but over time, you see kids forced to play sports or play activities or do things that they don't really want to do. So we're not forcing them to do it, but we are encouraging them. So if I can get a player to come and join in that was sat out for 2 or 3 weeks by, you know, pretending to be a dinosaur, chasing him around and he's escaping, and I'm going to do that because I want him to have a good time. I want to, you know, from a business point of view, I want him to come back and play in my programs or our programs. But I also just want to make sure he's just having fun. And I think that's the big thing because, you know, it's not about creating future US international players. It's about having fun with the kids. And sometimes we lose sight of that. And that's the most important thing. And if they like it, they'll come back. If they don't, they won't.
Exactly. And you think at that age, you know, I mean, I always thought that just the biggest benefit of a kid getting involved at that age group, I mean, I'll certainly do it whenever I have kids myself, I'm sure, is put them into, you know, a threes or fours class, But just like the focus that they can get, like after seeing a kid at like the first week, and you know how it is trying to herd a group of, you know, maybe nine.
No, it's herding like sheep or herding cattle, especially if you haven't got anybody to help you. You know, if you've got a helper, you're good. But if you haven't, it's tough, right?
It'd be tough. But like to see them after, you know, after the first week, and then by week seven, and you know they're hanging on your every word, or they're all sitting on a ball and they're looking at you. Like I just think that focus element that they get just being in a structured environment is
yeah. I think it's good for them. Again, you know, realistically with pre-K kids, you're not playing that much organized soccer in terms of like a game. You're not playing a 3v3 or a 4v4. Maybe as they are 4 turning 5 and going into kindergarten, you might introduce that. That's in my opinion. You know, I'm sure some coaches will be playing games with them pre-K kids, but in my opinion, I don't think you should. I think you should keep it to 30 to 45 minutes of just pure fun, adventure, storybook, you know, what we were just talking about there. But yeah, I do like the fact that you can engage them. You can get, discipline's the wrong word, but focus is the right word, the concentration. You know, as you said, sitting on a ball, and they start to understand the games and they start to know how to play them, and they start to, you know, do things and you don't expect it. Like they'll do a drag back turn at like 3 or 4 year old and you're just like, where's that come from? Or they'll be able to stop the ball and they'll be able to, you know, shout, what's up, coach? Or they'll be able to do whatever. And you're thinking, you know, maybe, as you said, 7 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, however long the program is, they couldn't do that. So you're seeing development happen pretty rapidly. And it's good to see, because the kids at that age are just like sponges, aren't they? They're sponges and they're absorbing it. They do the same in school. My kids come home from school. Luca comes home from school doing like maths homework, and I can't even do it. And he's in second grade. Like I'm having to get the calculator out. And he's like, he's absorbing it and he's telling me how to do it. And then there's the kids, but you've got to let them try it. You can't kind of be on them and joystick them, but you've got to try and catch them, you know, when they've been great and when they've been brilliant. And as you said, you know, that magic penny, you know, the cookie that they're stealing, whatever it is, just try and make it as fun and as enjoyable as possible.
I felt like you've done a great job though, and you know, a lot of the other coaches that I learned from done a great job of like indirectly teaching them some skills, you know, whilst they're involved in that environment. Like, you know, even if it was okay, you know, everyone, Mr. Freeze is coming, you know, put your foot on the ball and stopping after they've just been dribbling at speed to stop the ball with their sole of their foot. Like that's a great skill, right, for a 3-year-old.
Well, I think that, yeah, and then I've seen you do it, and I've seen you coach with the younger ages, and James and Ben and some of the other guys that we've worked with in the past. I think that having personality is massive. You have to have a personality, and if you don't, you'll struggle. I think you're struggling coaching if you don't have a personality. But I think that, yeah, teaching them a basic skill, again, just stopping the ball, or, you know, putting some sort of coordination, being able to jump over the ball at that very young age, or balancing with one foot on the ball, or whatever it may be, whatever you want to do, you can make it your own. You know, you're in charge. You make the session as fun or as, you know, as structured or as non-structured as you want. But like having been able to do that and having seen a lot of coaches and done a lot of coaching at that age group, it comes through experience. You know, like in teaching them, you're not going to be teaching them a Cruyff turn at 3 or 4 or a Ronaldo, but you can teach them a drag back, because, you know, you're going to be telling them that they need to paint the pirate ship deck, or clean the pirate ship deck. Or, you know, I always say when the floor's lava, if they roll their ball fast enough that they can create, you know, a little island for themselves. And just, you know, you just make it up as you go along.
Right.
Yeah, well, you have to have imagination. And that's where I think the coaches that turn away from like coaching the younger age groups, that's where they struggle. They don't quite have the imagination, or they don't have the ability to adapt. You know, when a kid's crying, or, you know, when a kid needs to go to the bathroom, or they can't play, or, you know, when they miss their mum, or whatever it may be, you know, you've got to be trying to adapt. But, you know, just my opinion. And
do you think that, you know, 3, 4, 5 year olds, you know, when you're in your classes, or, you know, just in general at that age group, those sort of adventure soccer classes, do you think it bridges a gap as they then go into maybe organized play at maybe U6, or do you think that you know, is that, what age would you recommend that kids would sort of get involved in more organized play then, from your experience?
I think U8 the organized play for me, in terms of like playing games, either scrimmages, festivals, you know, or playing within practice against each other. LMFC, Ben took our teams out of the U8 league. We start at U9, but we have a U8 program, a U8 academy, which play against each other, play against other towns occasionally, focused on, you know, skill development, ball mastery, all that, you know, all that good stuff. But at like U6 still, they're still in kindergarten. You're introducing the game to them. You are introducing a 3v3 potentially for, you know, 20, 30 minutes at the end of the session into a 4v4 maybe as they're in first grade. And you're balancing, in my opinion, you're balancing the session half ball mastery, being comfortable on the ball, receiving the ball, tricks, moves, turns, dribbling. You're still encouraging all that, but you're also putting it into a game environment where, you know, you're working on 1v1s a little bit. You're working on your 2v2s. You're working on an introduction to passing at 7 and 8 and two-player combinations. Mm-hmm. But U8 is where I think that kids should start to progress towards maybe team, but more, you know, like more program playing for your town or, you know, playing for a club. I think U6, and I know they do it in, like, you know, back home in England, there's U5 teams, you know, right. These academies have gotten, and they do it to get the best players, let's be honest. They try to recruit the best players so that other clubs don't have them. I don't think in the culture, the American culture and in Westchester, New York, that we need to be having U5, U6 teams. I know there are some U7 teams. And again, there are some very good players at that age and some players that are really into it and that can play at a really high level. And then, you know, they can go. But the average soccer player that's first grade or kindergarten, I don't think should be playing organized soccer at that kind of age. It should be once a week in a class or once a week rec or whatever it may be.
I know, you know, Ben Foster had done a, I'm working on the U8 Academy that, you know, and, you know, some, I guess the debate is when do they kind of, you know, that when do they move into, you know, 7v7 or, you know, I don't know, down in Texas there's some teams that are maybe, you know, that are U8 that are playing the 7v7 already.
There's people that I know that have their kids or are pushing their kids U8 playing U9 so they don't have to play 4v4. Yep. You know, there's a reason why US soccer changed it towards more of a European or world model. I still think that they need to fix the older ages somewhat. I think that, you know, I think that at U6, U7, it should be 3v3. I think at U8, U9, it should be 4v4. I think at U10 to U12, I still think it should be 7v7. And then at U13 to U15, I think it should be 9v9. I think at U16, it should go 11v11. And again, that's for the average soccer player, not for the elite player, the academy player, the premier club player. Mm-hmm. But you see, and you've seen it, you get a U13 team and they're 12 years old playing on a, you know, a full size field.
The field just swallows them up.
Yeah. It's just the most ridiculous thing in the world. They can't kick it that far. You know, they're not physically, in terms of their maturation, they're not able to get up and down the field. So keeping it, you know, small sided is important. And again, you know, US soccer has changed it, but some clubs and some teams and some coaches really still want to push their kids to play up. Like there's an obsession with playing in leagues, and there's so many leagues, and there's so many tournaments and so many this and so many that, but there's no pyramid, is there, to it? So whether you're playing in this league or another league, it just becomes a business. You know, and I'm sure you see it in Texas. We see it here in New York. If you want to go play in a league, there's a league for you, as long as you're willing to pay.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I'm really trying to do with PD1 is, you know, we are in two leagues with our team, but we're also joining an indoor league. And partly my reason for that was I wanted them to still be able to play smaller sided. You know, the 5v5s, and I feel like, you know, even hardcore futsal environments can really just push the, you know, just the ball mastery and the speed of play, I think. And for us indoor, I've just got, you know, I'm really not bothered about results at all with indoor soccer. But one thing I'm really, you know, just gonna really stress to our players is I want them to go and try some moves. I want them to go and try some 1v1 moves and just really try and encourage them to take players on. Sure, there'll be a little bit of possession in there, but I just want to give them a bit of freedom. Maybe they're a bit scared to do on the bigger field, but in indoor, you know, they've got that safety net of the boundary. You know, there's no outs, so it's going to come off a ricochet off a wall. I just really want to encourage the 1v1 play with that.
No, I think that's a great thing. I think that my favorite season is the winter season. here because we get to play at Armonk, which is either 5v5 or 6v6. And then you see the technical players come out. Maybe the players that potentially might struggle on a bigger field or where there is more space, you see the players inside. And again, it's not stereotypical. It might be the smaller player that is not as physical, strong, quick, athletic, is able to get on the ball and, you know, really play. And again, it's not really about the results. It's just about playing and enjoying it. And, you know, as a club, LMFC, we're not about the winning. As you said before, you mentioned it earlier, yeah. We're not about the winning. It has to be, you know, you have to win a certain amount of games to stay and play at a competitive level if it's a good level team. But also, you know, if we turned up and we were wearing pink uniforms with no badges on, I would hope by the style of play that you would know that it's an LMFC team. Because we try and play the right way. We're playing out the back. We go through the thirds. You know, we want players to be comfortable in possession, being able to receive it, you know, on the run, trying things one-on-one, creating opportunities, you know, combinations. It doesn't always happen, and we don't always win games, and we do sometimes struggle. But I feel as though when we watch us against other teams, we do play the right way, and we are teaching the kids to play the right way. And it's highlighted in the winter session. So playing indoors for you guys, I think that's a good thing. It just also it's a fun thing as well. It's a fun thing. Like, it's, you know, there's no pressure on them. It's a fun thing. You know, they can turn up and play. They can enjoy it. And it's something different as well. It's like when I was a kid, I'm sure when you were a kid, you know, you just play, right? You just play. We played where there was a bunch of garages next to a big industrial warehouse, and it came off the wall, ricochets, you know, you learn to stay on your feet because you'd end up getting scrapes and scars and bruises and bloody noses and all that sort of stuff.
You know, a garage door as the goal. Yeah. You know,
and again, I always encourage that to kids to play outside of the practices as much as possible. But unfortunately, I think the world has changed somewhat, and also the way that kids play has changed. You know, kids, you know, you'd go and knock on a few doors on a cul-de-sac or down your street, and you'd get a bunch of girls, boys, players older than you, players younger than you, to come and play with you. Now you have to call up somebody to have a play date with them. Sure. You know, you can't. I mean, there's a park across the street from our house where we are. We go and play in the park when there's anybody there. You know, boys look out the window, they go and play. They go and play, you know, soccer, football, they're going to throw a lacrosse ball around, baseball, whatever, you know. But I think there needs to be a bit more of that, you know. The best players develop learning on their own as well.
Absolutely.
Learning in unorganized, unfiltered environments. So it's important. And I think that futsal, that indoor soccer, that small-sided soccer, if you can encourage it, then definitely do it. I think if you build it into your program as well, then it just becomes the norm as well. I think the teams that I coach personally, I've got a couple of, you know, half-decent boys teams, they look forward to playing indoor soccer in the winter because it's fast-paced, it's competitive, and it's just different. It's just different from playing on a full-size field or a 9v9 field.
Oh, absolutely. And I think I remember we both done the D license together down in Virginia, but just having that, you know, the play, practice, play methodology, I thought it was fantastic, you know, when they
yeah, implemented that. Brilliant.
Because it is, I guess it is tougher, you know, when you grow up in the UK, your houses are very, just how they're structured, they're very close together, you know, council estates or whatever, but over here, I guess the houses are a little bit more spread out, and maybe it doesn't cater for that environment to play outside as much. But it can be, you know, I do think, you know, any way we can get them playing more, if it's, you know, but just 5 minutes before. And I agree. Like when we were at LMFC, you know, doing the we always done play, practice, play, even before it was even a thing with US soccer, even 2015, we were doing play, practice, play, and you see players, you know, just itching to get going. They'd be there early. They'd be, you know, because they knew they were going to get to play the first, you know, 5-10 minutes. And I even think as a coach, like, just giving them that opportunity to go and get that sort of energy out of them, where they're going to go and play 2v2s, give them, you know, the time to introduce the topic of the day to them, if it's, you know, passing or if it's whatever it is you're going to work on. And then after they kind of get that initial energy out of them, of, you know, the 2v2 play or 4v4s, whatever it is you're doing, then they're kind of ready to listen, you know, as you go into your
but you see when they get out of the car, the ones that really want to play, if you can energize them, and no matter what level they are, what level team or player they are, if you can get them to come to practice and really want to enjoy playing, you can entice them by, right, we're going to start with a game. What's better than that? We're going to start with a game of soccer. It's going to be a 3v3, no rules for this one. The next practice, it might be you can only pass forwards or three passes for a goal, everybody must touch it, whatever you want to put on it. But you see them slowly, they start getting to practice earlier and earlier. They start sprinting from the car to the field and they're hanging out on the side and doing moves and skills. And that's when you get them. That's when you've got them, and then you've got them enthusiastic about it. And that's when you can organise, I don't know, a barbecue over the summer. Or you can, you know, take them to a game. I know you guys just went to a game, right? Did you go in the end?
You know what? It was the ice storm here in Texas, and the roads were crazy. So there was one family that ended up going, but it was disappointing that we didn't get to go to the US game.
Well, I just think just things like that, you know, having things like that where we're going to try, I don't know if it'll happen in the spring, but we're going to try and do it at some point, having like a Friday night lights thing, yeah, where it's like a drop-in soccer thing. You just sign up. We're going to try and get a field where it's just, you know, organized but free play games. There's pinnies, there's bow net pop-up goals. We set the field up and we have a coach as a facilitator, not as a coach, just making sure that, you know, there's no problems, no issues, and just letting them play. Myself and Ben Foster, we did a 3v3, 4v4 program a few summers ago. It was brilliant. We'd have all the kids come and just play. We wouldn't do pretty much any coaching. It was just playing. We'd have three fields of 4v4 going on. And it was great. And I think more of that sort of stuff in clubs can only benefit the kids, especially the kids that really want it, the kids that really want to play. You know, each kid is different, and some kids play other sports, other activities. Some kids play for social reasons. But the ones that really want to play and improve and get better and develop, those are the kids that you've got to try to, you know, cater for. You've got to give them as much as you can really, you know, afford to give them, and also as much opportunity as you can give them, you know.
Well, I mean, I rate you very highly as a coach, and I feel like you could probably coach it at any level, even men's soccer. What does the future look like for Ben Scott in coaching?
To be honest, I do know. I'm looking at, I've done the C license, potentially doing the B license at some point. Might not be for a year or two, but I want to do it. Coach education, like continued like professional development, is important to me. I read a lot of books. If you're on my social media, if you go on GB Soccer Coaching on Instagram or Facebook, I read a lot, not just on soccer, but on, you know, business, self-help, other sports, listen to a bunch of podcasts, so all that informal learning. I mean, I enjoy it. You know, some of the podcasts out there, you know, soccer specific, football specific, but other performance, even just comedy, anything, just trying to try and take your mind. But the formal learning, maybe the La Liga courses, looking to potentially do those ones. And the Tovo stuff looks good. I know you're going to jump on one of those courses soon.
Yeah,
it looks good. Just a different outlook on things. But in terms of my coaching, I want to keep doing what I'm doing. I enjoy it. LMFC, the environment's good. I think we are the best grassroots club in Westchester, not premier club, but grassroots, you know, local club for local kids. I think we offer the best product. I think we've got some of the best coaches around. We have a good model developmentally. I'm toying with the idea about doing some college coaching potentially. Looking at doing some voluntary stuff to start with, and maybe then jumping on as an assistant. So I'm speaking to a few people about that at the moment. Other clubs, maybe in the future, I don't know. I like where I am at the moment and what we do. But I never say never. You know, if an opportunity came up, I'd always listen to people. I don't mind speaking to people about what's going on. But apart from that, I think kind of where I'm at. And the lastly is maybe, again, if I get the right qualifications, looking to do some sort of like grassroots, you know, instructor license, something like that, passing on, not again, not my knowledge, but, you know, trying to improve and help coaches at the grassroots level, the novice coaches that are coming into. I think I can, you know, put something back into the game that way. Having been a grassroots novice coach myself, I think that after 20 years, I think I've got something to offer there. But I'll just have to make sure that I've got all the coaching, you know, licenses before I can do that. So that's kind of the plan to do what I'm doing. And then with GB Soccer, just kind of offering more, you know, more classes during the days and the daycares, the nursery schools, and just, you know, just trying to grow the game a little bit and keep kids loving it and enjoying playing. I'm trying to, you know, keep giving them a good environment and a good platform to play on, really.
Well, I'll say I just wanted to thank you first as well for obviously coming on today. But, you know, in general, I feel like you've definitely, out of all of the people that I've, you know, been, you know, that have been my director of coaching or coach educator, you've done, I feel like, made a real impact on my own coaching. So obviously, I thank you for that. And no hopefully problem. We can, you know, I really would love to get you back on to do more podcasts. I'm sure there's many.
I can be, yeah. I can become a regular guest, Greg, if you need me. I'm always happy to chat about, you know, soccer, football, life generally. I think it's important, as you were saying, you talked a bit off air about just catching up. You know, you live in Texas now, I'm still in New York. Other people live across the country, across the world, and it's important just to have a chat, you know, with people, see how people are getting on. And you know, I'm always happy to talk.
Fantastic. Well, Ben, thanks very much for your time today. Hopefully we'll hear you on here again soon, mate. Thank you.
Yeah, good luck with PD1 and everything that's going on, mate. Good luck, mate.
Thanks, Ben.